Welcome to one of the hottest pre-Super Bowl parties going on right now, I think. Right? You're here. Didn't know you were coming, huh? Next weekend, our board of trustees, our members from the Committee on Ministry, and a number of church leaders are going to spend a day together, as they do most years. They're going to do what they do, being church leaders. They're going to talk about the future of our church, our hopes and dreams, and how to live those out. Now, I don't know how much you follow religion-y stuff in the news, but you do not need to search very far to find discussion about the rise of the so-called religious nuns. Now, when I say religious nuns, what's the first image that pops into your head? Right, right. Catholic white ladies and black habits, right? Yeah, nuns, N-U-N-S. But in fact, what is meant is the polar opposite. The religious nuns, N-O-N-E-S. These are the folks that when they fill out surveys about their identity, about religious identity, they generally check the nun box. And they are young, predominantly white folks, and they choose not to identify themselves with a tradition or community, though most of them come from Christian families and have certainly been formed by a particular tradition. We all come from somewhere, for better and worse. So in these discussions about the non-habit-wearing nuns, you will generally also find mention of the long-term decline in membership in established churches and congregations, a trend that actually started in the 1960s. And there is one word that pretty much sums up the message of a lot of these articles. Worry. Because the nuns are folks who say that they are spiritual but not religious, and they tend not to join congregations, even though they clearly have what most of us would call religious beliefs. Most believe in God, whatever that word means, and many have some kind of prayer practice. Now, Unitarian Universalists have not experienced the same decline as more traditional churches. We've kind of remained steady over the years, some slight decline, some years, slight growth others. But still, there is anxiety expressed throughout UU land about the future of our tradition. We have remained somewhat steady in terms of membership numbers, but this actually means that as a percentage of the population, we have shrunk. Can we grow? Do we want to? Should we bring more members into our community, and why? What will our congregations look like in 5, 10, 20 years? But my friends, I am here today to tell you that actually, you do not need to worry. You do not need to let this anxiety about membership and growth grip you. Because we got a playground. Yes, we have a playground that the children play on, and frankly, I would encourage the adults to do so as well. Regina can testify to how awesome the swings are. Slide is quite awesome as well. But this Star King Church does not just have that physical play structure that so many hands of you all raised up. We have a playground of the spirit. Now, before I describe what I mean by this, I think we need to unpack that tricky word, spirit. Now, it's too bad Keith Lewis isn't here today. Keith broke his foot and then throughout his back, and so he's actually in a lot of pain right now. I spoke with him yesterday, and he gave me his blessing to talk about him. So I want to take a quick poll. How many of you have had a conversation with Keith Lewis, a longtime member of our congregation? How many of you have had a conversation with him about the word spirituality? Really? Okay. Well, that's okay. You know what? If you have not had the pleasure of discussing this with him, I highly encourage you to do so. He's going to be getting a lot of phone calls, isn't he? But be forewarned. Keith is persistently curious and, quite frankly, will take you to the mat about the word spirituality. And in fairness, Keith isn't the only one trying to pin down the definition of this very common yet really vague and ambiguous word. In 2012, academics at the Social Science Research Council published a paper exploring why and how social scientists could and should explore spirituality. And one of the conclusions of the paper was that it wasn't that we lacked definitions of spirituality, it's that we have so many of them. Now, one definition says that spirituality is the stuff you do and feel independent of a religious community. Essentially, it's what church is not. And people who define spirituality this way are generally opting out of community participation because they think that going it on one's own will allow them to be more real and authentic. You could say that this definition of spirituality is really just antisocial religion. Another definition is that spirituality is something you experience or practice in religious community. And here, the definition suggests that there is this universal underlying element that we draw upon or are inspired by. And then the last definition, which is the most cynical and critical, says that spirituality is the word we use for narcissistic drive to self-improvement. Want to lose weight? Want to be happy? Meditate. Do yoga. And I think there is truth in these definitions and insights we can pay attention to. But one of the most significant insights I've had about spirituality did not come from sitting alone reading some academic paper. It came over lunch with Keith Lewis. Keith is the executive director of Horizon Services, which provides alcohol and drug treatment services. And their programs utilize a 12-step model of Alcoholics Anonymous. And fundamental in a 12-step model is this commitment that folks need to follow a spiritual program in order to recover from addiction. And so this question Keith has about trying to figure out what the heck is spirituality is not just an intellectual abstract one for him. It's fundamental in his responsibilities to run a place of healing and recovery for those struggling with addiction. Now, I must confess that I initially thought Keith's enthusiasm for challenging spirituality, that was kind of the standard Unitarian Universalist allergy to any transcendent ideas or theologies. Far too many of us were raised to believe in not only some outside transcendent power, usually called God, but also that transcendent power was basically like an abusive parent. God was angry but loving, vindictive but forgiving. Country and folk singer Butch Hancock, I think, summarized this brand of Christian theology really well when he described growing up in Texas. Hancock said, "Life in Lubbock, Texas taught me two things. One is that God loves you, and you are going to hell. The other is that sex is the most awful, filthy thing on earth, and you should save it for someone you love." So, of course, we UUs are going to protest anyone telling us that a confused, mercurial, abusive parent God is running the show. If that's what God is, you're darn right I'm an atheist. But over the course of that hour and a half lunch at Chef's Experience China Bistro, I eventually came to understand Keith's questions differently. Keith was asking, why do people use the word spirituality to describe the things they do? Why do we use the word spirituality when we are talking about a feeling of connection to other people, to nature, to a sense of purpose? Why do we use it to describe sitting on a pillow and focusing on our breathing? Why would we call our efforts to live ethically spiritual? And what came to me was this. There are ways we want to act, ways we want to live that are not generally supported or condoned by most of the institutions and cultures we find ourselves in. We are like Arundhati Roy in the reading, having to defend our way of living and hoping and dreaming to a culture that lacks imagination, a culture that insists it can only be downhill from here. And through my conversation with Keith, I came to define spirituality this way. The things we do so we don't hurt so much. And if larger society does not legitimize these ways of being, where do we find the courage? How do we grant ourselves the authority to live in a way that resists the cynicism and lack of imagination showed by Arundhati Roy's friend? I think what we do is draw on an ancient word and concept, a word that has carried a lot of authority and power over the years. Spirit, ruach in Hebrew, literally translated as breath or wind. Spirituality. Because apparently, for whatever reason, simply hurting less is not reason enough. If spirituality is the word we use to describe things we do so we don't hurt so much, what are those things? And my friends, what gives me so much hope for this congregation and how it lives out Unitarian Universalism is that I know you know what these things are. I know it because I saw you all do it when you raised up our new playground. David Middleton is a kind of new member of the community. He and Lou and their children, Emma and Maya, have been part of this community for how many years, Lou? Three-ish? Okay, yeah. I also got permission from David to talk about him. I know there's this trend of talking about people who aren't here, but I swear they knew that was happening. And like many people who join a church with young children, David first got active in our religious exploration and family ministry program. And this church year, he became chair of the Religious Education Council. And it was his leadership that drove the playground project. Now, it would have been very easy to look at the playground project as a mostly, if not entirely, technical project, a problem to be solved. Help me out here. What needed to happen to do the playground project? What problems or challenges needed to be addressed?
Pay for it.
Pay for it? Get rid of the old stuff?
Safety.
Agree, right? Yeah, agree. It was a good idea.
Procuring materials.
Find people to do it.
And get it done.
Exactly. Amen. Right. The biggest challenge of all. And it would have been completely understandable for David to get caught up in just getting the project done fast, because wasn't the goal a new and safer playground for our children? But that's not how David approached it. David began talking to people who had been in the congregation longer than he had, people that I don't think David had had the opportunity to spend a lot of time with yet. First, he got a chance to talk with church leaders like our board president, Colleen Dino, and VP, Diane Dickerson, and the rest of the good people serving on our board. And then from there, he realized he had to talk to the folks responsible for the old play structure. Was that Dick Albert, maybe Colin Carroll, Walt, or maybe other folks? And then, of course, he had to talk to Frank Satterwhite so he could figure out all the money stuff. And then through these conversations, he realized he really needed to talk with Gerald Mosier, because Gerald was the one who knew about the sewer lines and where all that stuff was running underneath the ground. And apparently, Gerald holds the architectural plans from the church's big renovation, which was, what, 5, 6 years ago? Longer than that? How many years did the renovation project happen? Okay. So I want to take a slight digression, because Gerald is also the only one, I think, who knew where the time capsule was, where that got buried 10 years ago. And it's scheduled to be open in, what, 2024 or something? So we all know, okay, the time capsule is, where the middle door, where the doors meet out here, the middle, that line, goes 60 feet straight out from that line, right about where the swings are, and dig down. That's where the time capsule is, okay? You all got that? Don't forget. David did not just focus on the technical and material aspects of the project. He tended to the human beings and the relationships. Because what truly holds a playground together is not the cement and the wood. It's relationship. It's community. It's the church. We are not just made of flesh and bones. We are made of relationships and stories. And David listened to stories, probably more stories than he expected. And moreover, David became part of the story, became even more embedded in this community. And in the process of raising up a new playground, I think David was profoundly touched and moved in ways he did not expect. Like breath, ruach, relationships cannot be seen, yet they are the most basic sustaining force of our living. Relationships are like soil. You can go through a few seasons planting willy-nilly whatever you want, but if you do not tend to the needs of the soil, soon that land will not be giving you much of anything. When you prioritize the soil, what you plant will grow. How we relate, whether it's building a playground or facilitating a committee meeting, how we relate to one another offers us opportunities for healing, recovering, and even transformation, because our greatest wounds are also from relationships. Thus, it is only through healthy, healing relationships that we may recover from what has hurt us so deeply. Whereas the greater society demands us to be more efficient, more practical, more focused on concrete goals and success, church tells us something different. Church is different. Church lets us practice being different. Church is the place where, through engaging with the inherent messiness and imperfection of us human beings, through relating in all kinds of ways, whether it's making sandwiches and pies and cookies for post-worship snack, thank you, Joyce, or weeding the grounds, or painting the new playground fence, or watching children, or heck, just by being here, through relating in all of these ways, bit by bit, we may begin hurting a little less. Church is like a playground. You go there where there are other people who will play games with you, spin you on the hanging tire, or push you on the swing. You don't go to church to be productive. You go there to play. You go there to relate. And while it is fun a lot of the time, you will get your fair share of bumps and bruises. Take out your order of service, if you would, and look at the front, that picture of Regina. I love that photo. Such joy. And a few weeks after Robin Fink snapped that photo, Regina's father died. Star King Church is the place where you come to swing to your heart's delight, young or old. And Star King Church is also the place you come when a few weeks later, mortality steals away a loved one. Star King Church is where you weave your life into the interdependent web and where you drill your stories into the fence posts. Do you drill fence posts? I don't even know. Okay. Where you drill your stories into fence posts, hammer your stories into the playset, and where you bake your stories into some brownies. Star King Church is where you come to love, to be loved, to never forget your own insignificance, to never get used to the unspeakable violence and the vulgar disparity of life around you, to seek joy in the saddest places, to pursue beauty to its lair, to never simplify what is complicated or complicate what is simple, to respect strength, not power, above all, to watch, to try and understand, to never look away, and never, never to forget. And when mortality steals away your own life, as it will for every single one of us, Star King Church is the place where you will be remembered. Star King Unitarian Universalist Church in Hayward, California does not need to worry. Don't misunderstand me. Just because you don't need to worry does not mean there is not a lot of work to do. There are fences to be painted, like after church next Sunday. Sign-ups in the back, I think, or talk to Colleen Dino. There is money to be raised and stewarded. And we live in a broken world. And there are so many broken people who need a place of sanctuary. How do we take who and what we are out into the world? Yes, my friends, there is work to be done. Just like there was work to get done to make this new playground possible. But we don't need the anxiety to get the work done. We do not need to worry. Because Star King UU Church is a playground of the spirit. Another world is not only possible, she is on her way. And on a quiet day, we can hear her breathing. Blessed be.